The framework we use for companies is, whether you're a small business or Fortune 500, is to kind of get to your why, but not your WHY, but WHI. And so those three questions you always want to be able to answer are, what's the mission of the company? How do we differ from the competition? And then I, if we went away tomorrow, what's the loss to society? That last question is huge. If we went away tomorrow, what's the loss to society? It's huge for Generation Y and Generation Z and now Generation Alpha as they enter the workforce, because they want to know, what's the purpose?
It's one small step for man.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
We choose to go to the moon, not because they are easy, but because they
are
hard.
I have a dream.
You can't handle the truth.
7.
6.
5.
4.
3.
2.
1.
Super, 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 super.
Super you.
Welcome back to the Super You Podcast. I'm Jake with Equalman Studios. We had some rough audio on this episode, but it was still a great interview, so bear with us. Enjoy.
We are here with Ira Kaufman, PhD. He is a transformation strategist, CEO, social entrepreneur, and educator. For 50 years, his passion is building human-centered enterprises for profit and nonprofit. His company, Entwine Digital, works with mid-sized organizations and multinationals to design values-based, social impact-driven digital marketing and transformation strategies. As a co-founder of the Global Transformation Corps, he inspires catalyzers across generations to collaborate on enterprises that support a more harmonious planet. He co-authored Empower Us, From Crisis to Strategic Harmony, and Digital Marketing with Purpose. Thank you so much for joining us today, Ira.
Thank you. It's really a pleasure to be with you and interact with Eric.
Yeah, we're super pumped to have you here, Ira. So let's get into it. We're going to have a great conversation. I want to get into Empower Us. But before we do that, I'd love to answer any questions that you might have.
Well, I've been following your work for probably 8 or 10 years when we both began this whole work of the digital transformation. You informed us through social economics. And so I have a bunch of questions. One is, you know, I read your book of the Focus Project, and I find that is focusing people's attention on who they are is critical. So one of the areas where I focus on is purpose and how you create purpose as a passion. Have you thought of that and worked with that with your clients and in your interactions in terms of empowering purpose? And how do you do it?
It's interesting because once you get into this, whether it's business, whether it's personal, it always goes back to what's that core essence. And one thing I always like to ask is, what's your word? So they do an exercise. And for all you listeners out there, you've probably done this before when I've asked you, but it's just, if someone were to Google your name right now, what's the one word you want to show up? What do you want to show up 5 seconds from now, 5 years, 50 years, 500 years from today? And then I implore the audience to take that word and then you take it to a sentence level. And so that framework for that sentence level should be in the form of to blank so that. And so if your word, my word's empower. And so a lot of you listeners out there, that might be your word, but your sentence will be different. So my goal is, my sentence is to empower people to their best life so that they can inspire others to do the same. And it works for companies too. The framework we use for companies is, whether you're a small business or Fortune 500, is to kind of get to your why, but not your WHY, but WHI. And so those three questions you always want to be able to answer are, what's the mission of the company? How do we differ from the competition? And then I, if we went away tomorrow, what's the loss to society? That last question is huge. If we went away tomorrow, what's the loss to society? It's huge for Generation Y and Generation Z and now Generation Alpha as they enter the workforce, because they want to know, what's the purpose? Exactly what you just mentioned. What's the purpose? What's the point? And so that's somewhat of a new thing. At least it's above surface now. It's always been there for, as you know, for many years, for decades, but now it's above surface.
Well, that's very exciting because I've developed a thing called the transformation why with a why. And it actually has to be the transformative element in companies. So that really leads me to my second question. You know, we've both been in this whole digital transformation space for years. And I'm sure you're familiar with the studies that say about 84% of digital transformation efforts fail. And last year, it cost our U.S. global company some $900 million. That's an incredible amount of wasted money. Why do you think that happens?
Well, I think, I don't know if it's a waste. I think it's education. So I think that money's education. It's like Thomas Edison, many centuries before, 1,000 ways to make that light bulb. So 1,000 ways I learned that I did not make the light bulb. And so I think the companies that are doing well do invest a lot of money in that education, and they understand that it's not, they're not going to get it right the first time. The worst thing to do, though, is some companies that I go into, they kind of pull the Band-Aid off and then put it back on, pull it off, put it back on, or they cross the street halfway, then they turn around and go back. That's when you start to get into that waste. So you've got to have the conviction and the confidence as an organization when you lose that money, especially at the beginning. You've got to remind yourself that pioneers always get pushed back. If it's easy, it'd already be done. And that you're just investing in your education as long as you're learning from your failure. Because a lot of people say, you know, failure is part of the process, what it is, but they don't understand is you need to evaluate that failure, which in our DNA as human beings, we don't want to do that. It's hard to have those conversations and sit down and go, Timmy, Jill, what happened? What happened? That was a disaster. You know, what happened there? And if you talk with, like, Sarah Blakely, the founder of Spanx, her father always asked her when she got home from school, what'd you fail at today? And so as a company, you have to have that DNA. It taught her to go out and fail, and that's how she's able to start Spanx, through a lot of failures to get there. But it's really about having that conviction to not go halfway across the street. But when you lose those millions and sometimes billions of dollars, to keep going down that road, that's education. Learn from it, evaluate that failure, and then fail forward.
So, you know, I appreciate that. And I think that we all have to learn from what we fail and why we fail. But in a lot of my my work in consulting with nonprofits and multinationals globally, they start at the wrong place. They start at the technology and instead of starting at the people. They're not investing in understanding mindset and values and why, purpose. And that, because digital technologies is so transformative and also so pervasive, that they hook on to the material aspect instead of the human aspect. And want to know what your experience is in that area.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, obviously you're at the tip of the spear on all this stuff, but I always implore people and companies to invest in the trend, not the tool. Invest in your people, not the tools. The tools are going to change. We don't know which one's going to win. If we went back 20 years ago, what's going to win? Lycos, Dogpile, Excite, Ask Jeeves, Yahoo. Google eventually won that. We didn't know it was going to win. We just knew search was here to stay. So that's what I mean about investing in the trend. And then investing in the people. If you do things well, over time you invest in your people. It doesn't matter what trends change, because they'll be able to adjust to those. To exactly your point, is that don't go chasing the shiny object. You know, shine your people, shine the light on your people. And if you do that, that's the best investment ever. So don't invest in the tools, invest in the trend, and invest in your people.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So do I have a chance for another question?
Yeah, one more, I'll turn around on you.
Great, great. So the fourth question I have is, as you probably realized from my introduction, I am really passionate about building your bridge between current leaders and emerging leaders. And to realize that the doctrine of Milton Friedman, that the social responsibility of businesses to make a profit, is really antiquated and an old doctrine. And so I ask you, how would you prepare the next generation of leaders, these emerging leaders, with what I really call is the rising voices, the next generation women and the marginalized, to address these five convergent crises, which are almost killing our world right now? The COVID, the economic recession, fear and isolation, climate and misinformation. How do you train them? How do you prepare them for that?
First of all, I'm excited. I do believe the future is female. I have two daughters, so I can't wait to see that transition, that transformation. And then also, too, is the best preparation. People always ask me, what's the definition of digital leadership? I say it, the shortest possible word is just empathy. So as much as you could teach empathy, and we're starting to see that at the elementary level, that they actually are focused more on a student's emotional effort rather than knowing how to do multiplication. And so it's really about that empathy. That's what digital leadership is all about. And then understanding that it's about being firm in your destination and flexible in your path. Who would have known that we had a pandemic this year? Nobody. And so it's about firm in your destination, flexible in your path. And so if you could take those two things together, that empathy and then having that flexibility, being firm in your destination, flexible in your path, knowing there's going to be challenge after challenge put at you, it's going to push you off of that linear path. And it's about getting back to that path. It's about getting your team back to your path. If you have that empathy, then that team will be willing to follow you and then impact that change. As a leader, when you become frustrated and you find yourself lamenting or complaining about something, unless you're going to do something about it, stop complaining. But if you could keep complaining about it, that's an opportunity to fix it. And it might be a business opportunity. So you're not going to tackle every opportunity. So you might go, you know what? That thing frustrates me, but I'm going to stop talking about it because unless I'm going to do something about it, me complaining about it's not going to do anything. Or two, holy smokes, what a huge business opportunity. Let's attack that. And what we've seen is if you remove friction, if you're good at business, the good thing is we'll get turned the tables here in a second because you know this better than I do, is that when you do that, social good comes out of it more times than not. And so that's the beauty of it. And so that's why I love having you on the show. I can't wait to dig into the catalyst and dig into some other items.
Well, go for it.
Yeah. So you use the term catalyst in your book. And can you tell us, and I know it's a big word, catalyzer. Can you explain to the audience what a catalyzer is?
Well, I'll go through it as simply as I can. If anybody has any chemistry, in a catalytic reaction, a chemical catalytic reaction, about 80% of chemical reactions in the world are by adding a catalyst or a new kind of chemical to an existing chemical to speed up or accelerate the interaction or the reaction. And the most important part of adding a catalyst is what you do is you decrease the amount of activation energy or the amount of resistance there is to changing the product, or in our case, changing a political candidate or changing buying a new brand. So if you can figure out a way by adding a catalyst, a new catalyst, to a transaction, which decreases the amount of resistance or the amount of activation energy for somebody to buy it or adopt it, we have a new, incredibly new marketing formula. So guess what our new catalyst is, Eric?
What is that?
We call them the four test values: trust, empathy, sustainability, and transparency. Empathy is one of them. So if we make trust as one of the catalysts, we add that to the product mix. Say if we were having an election in the United States and the political candidate was the most trusted, one of the political candidates was the most trusted political candidate, do you think they would have to spend as much money and as much resources convincing people how great they were if they had a 95% trust rate? Of course not, because you've used that catalyst as a venue for increasing receptivity and decreasing the amount of activation energy. And the second area of developing in catalysis is a thing you're extremely familiar with, is increasing the heat. Well, how would you create the heat, to increase the heat in a product launch or a presidential election? How would you? Social media, you increase the buzz, increase the interactivity. So you increase the heat, you put values into the model, and then you create a different kind of what we call catalytic transformation. And the catalyzer is different from the leader. The leader currently is protecting or controlling their environment. They're using old power to maintain their control of their position and their authority. And the catalyzer is dedicated, laser focused on radical collaboration and trying to use and really trying to incorporate their values, digital emerging technologies, and human-centered best practices to create sustainable change and measurable social impact.
And is there anyone in the book, and the book is, just for the audience, it's Empower Us from Crisis to Strategic Harmony. Is there anyone in the book that exemplifies a catalyzer, or is there a story or an individual that we can kind of all relate to that's like, that's a person that's a catalyzer?
Well, you know, I can give you many, many examples. And one I will give you is the current CEO of Chobani. You know of Chobani, the yogurt company?
Yes, Chobani yogurt, Greek yogurt, yes.
The Greek yogurt. And the man who came over was a man called Mr. Hamdi, Ukulkaya. And he came over in his late 30s as an immigrant from Turkey. And he had this vision that he wanted to change the way yogurt was bought in the United States and offered. So he developed for a year this incredible ingredients. And then he went up north outside of up in New York State to buy an old factory. And he used immigrants who were very loyal to him to create that factory. And he had a philosophy that his workers were the most important element of his whole process. And he was very, very dedicated to them. So he was really, he looked at purpose was the most important element and his values. He said the most important value in his company was gratitude and empathy for the people who are working for him and who are going to consume his product. So he developed an excellent product with extremely loyal workforce who delivered it. And in 5 to 7 years, he created an $8 billion company and transformed the entire yogurt industry. He created a new magazine or blog post called the Anti-CEO Playbook, which is based upon gratitude and values and inclusivity. And each day they contribute over a truckload of yogurts and all of their oat milk and all kinds of organic products, very sustainable products, to the local communities from the 2 or 3 different plants around the United States. So he's an example of a person that internalizes their values, thinks that profit is a thing that comes out naturally, but it's a just profit. It's not exorbitant, it's not abusive, and his company is not based on self-interest. It's based upon us and not we. And that's what Empower Us is all about. It's about us and not we. And not me.
No, it's about us and not me. I love that story. Chobani yogurt, I eat it. I also eat now Icelandic yogurt. So we've got it all covered. But that's great that he's giving back. Why do you think leaders... What leaders, you don't have to say examples of these, if you have company examples, feel free. Are there any ones on the other side of the coin to where they just don't get it, to where you go, wow, that person made that mistake. They don't understand that it's about the empathy and the trust.
Well, I mean, I won't point a finger, but I'll give you an example. Last year, and you are probably very familiar with it, the Business Roundtable created a new proclamation that said that went against the doctrine of Milton Friedman and said that purpose and values had to drive the company. And there were 182 CEOs, Eric, which signed on to that proclamation. If you do an analysis and accountability, a fraction of them, a very small fraction of them, actually did what they proclaimed. So the problem, and we point this out in the book, the problem is the difference between what you proclaim and what you do. And you have to be accountable for what you say. And you know this, when you talked about, I was reading in your book about empathy and how you live what you're trying to do. This is all in the business world. They don't look at it that way because they're trying to go back to, they're trying to reset the companies to the new normal. I say they need a new harmony, a new way of harmonizing their values and their purpose with all of the needs of all of their stakeholders instead of just the shareholder. And they're so focused on themselves and their self-interest, they can't go beyond that, no matter what they proclaim. And there's so many examples of it. It's just incredible.
And when you get into, let's say you're in the elevator, there's like two CEOs, they go, you're Ira Kaufman. Okay. All right. I'm not going to pay you for this session, but just tell me what's the one tactical thing I need to do that I don't understand right now that most just aren't doing, to where you go, if you do this, that's the right step in the right direction.
I would say that you asked me a question once, I would give them one simple bit of advice. If you looked at a decision that you make and you look at that decision through a filter of 2 or 3 or 4 values, I'll use the test values, trust, empathy, sustainability, and transparency. And see what decision you came up with originally, and then go through those 2 or 3 values, go through empathy. Are you really empathizing with all your stakeholders or your stakeholders? Is your decision based upon the sustainability and the impact on your
customers and on your employees and on your community. Put that as a filter and see if you come up with the same answer, if not readjust it. Then you're going to be on the path to a more sustainable or becoming a catalyzer, one that who is self-reflective and can transform themselves and then transform that into a different external strategy or business model.
No, that's great. And then that's Empower Us from Crisis to Strategic Harmony. That's the book. You also wrote the book Digital Marketing with a Purpose. I love the Chobani example from Empower Us. Is there an example for digital marketing with a purpose that you see people that are doing it right when it comes to digital marketing?
Oh, wow. I will tell you, to me, one of the best living examples in the world is IKEA. IKEA was founded many, many years ago, and the founder created a Bible for all his employees. And the Bible was about all these the values which we all agree upon, and he made all his employees accountable to it, and he was totally involving all of the employees in the decision making of the company. And he reached out on a regular basis in both through social, now through social media and originally through home visits to listen to what the employees wanted, what the consumers wanted, and process it through his employees. So he was totally listening and empathetic to what they were doing. And then his marketing strategies were always locally based and totally involving what the needs of the local community were. So he was involving people, listening to people, responding to people, getting their feedback, being transparent and accountable. That is, to me, a digital leader, a real digital marketer with purpose, and one who has had, I think the numbers are in the 400 million euros with 275 stores in 45 or 50 different countries. And it's an incredible example of growth, just growth and sustainable growth, and listening to your customers and doing a lot of work in the digital world to utilize those assets.
No, that's a great example. Obviously, a Swedish company, IKEA. I worked at a Swedish company. I'm not Swedish. I look Swedish. I mean, I have some descendants from Sweden. But when I worked in the company with a name like Eric, E-R-I-K, everyone always came up to me speaking Swedish. So it's kind of funny. And I'd be like, no, I don't speak Swedish. But interesting enough, we were golfing with the founder of IKEA, and he told us something that I use to this day all the time, is that you have to be a year ahead of your competition, but never a year ahead of your market. He's like, Eric, you only need to be a year ahead of your competition, but never a year ahead of your market. So I love that. I love that insight. So it's a great example. Switching gears real quickly here, we're going to kind of go into a lightning round. So we're going to ask you some quick questions, and then we'll wrap things up. But we've got, first question, what Super U episode is your favorite?
Oh, the one on the Focus Project.
And, thank you.
I love that. That to me is really the best because it's aligned with what I believe in, you know, totally aligned.
Yeah, no, that's why I was excited to have you on here. It's brothers from a different mother. So here we go. What's number two, best advice you've ever been given and by whom?
I'll give you two pieces. One is to under-promise and over-deliver. It's given to me by a dear friend of mine who was a CEO of many different companies. And the second one is after you're challenged and want to react or defend yourself, instead of doing that, take a deep breath, pause, contemplate, and then respond strategically considering multiple points of view. It takes a lot of practice to do that. And that was because I've been practicing Sufi meditation and yoga for 40 years. So I've had a practice on using self-reflection and pausing and breathing between different elements. And I think that's a very important thing in terms of business because you get into so many undue arguments and defending yourself instead of listening and responding.
That's great. And the first one, under-promise and over-deliver, fantastic. I mean, I remember I was waiting tables and they'd talk to the hostess and they'd say, the host and the hostesses and say, hey, if the wait is 15 minutes, tell them 25. Because if it's 15, they'll be excited. So under promise and over deliver is always good advice. Excluding mine, obviously, what's your favorite book or podcast or both that you feel our listeners should know about?
Well, I will tell you, one of the books that, and you're a digital guy, which really, really impressed me. I don't know if you've read it. It's called The Seventh Sense by Joshua Cooper-Ramo. And Joshua looked at the importance of looking at your market through a network instead of your product, and scaling your product, scaling your product or through your network, and then think as a network. And he used the example of then candidate Trump when you were looking at Jeb Bush, who had a gold chest of money and contacts, and he only had 5,000 or 10,000 at that time Twitter followers, but he scaled and accelerated that through that marketplace and expanded to millions. And he did that through a digital network because he understand how to pulse the digital marketplace and look at himself as a part of a network instead of a product, which you have to reconstruct every year.
That's great. 7 cents. I'll have to check it out. It's fascinating. If you look at that, like you mentioned, Trump didn't have the resources. And the same thing, it just jogged the memory that when I wrote Socialnomics, that when Obama was going against Hillary, she had the war chest, she had the DNC, and then he had to get creative to beat her to become the nominee for the Democrats. And so that's why I was talking about companies. I go, sometimes it's an advantage to not have the gold chest. It makes you get creative. I love that. Who's a mentor? Who's been an inspiration in your life?
Well, it's very interesting. I studied at Northwestern University as an academic 50 years ago, and I worked with a man called Philip Kotler. He's the father of modern marketing. And he really taught me that you have to look past only the profit and what the company, how the company really creates value for you. And it began a thing I call my transformation journey. And if I have a minute or two, I can just share it with you. It's about 8 steps. Is that worth it?
Let's do it. I mean, okay. Philip Kotler, for the listeners, as I just mentioned, he is the father of modern marketing. I mean, I read textbooks from Philip Kotler. We all did in this generation at the university level. And so, yes, please go into that. That'd be great.
So, Phil, I did the first PhD thesis with Phil when I was about almost 5 decades ago, believe it or not, on social marketing. And then we wrote a book when I was a PhD student called Creating Social Change. And I realized that the first thing we needed to do, and I was a 60s kid, the first thing you need to do is open yourself up to a new situation or multiple perspectives on what you were doing. And that was me when I was the 60s, when I was in my 20s, I wanted to challenge the old normal in terms of how business can become more socially responsible. And then you have to say, okay, if you really want to look at an issue, you have to really dedicate yourself to that issue and look at how you incorporate your own ethics and your own values to create some kind of strategy that create a new common good. And the third thing I had to do is I had to go inside myself. And I studied with a man called J.E. Rash, who's a teacher and a visionary and a specialist in human leadership values. And he really inspired me and opened up a whole new venue of how to integrate my values in my personal life and practical. And he called it practical idealism. And the fourth thing is that I had to be courageous enough to challenge and confront my old beliefs that business was only for profit. I was indoctrinated to that since I was a kid, and so is every other business student, and I'm sure you were as well. But I had to realize that that was not right, and I had to say, how was I going to deal with that? So I had to take these new values I have, incorporate them and my purpose into my business or my marketing or my entrepreneurship, and I had to reinvent who I was and really make a real, that had to be my work about reinventing who I was. And then I had to look at how do I take this new values-driven product or brand and, like you do, scale it through a digital lens and scale it through a digital network. And then I had to look at how I can take these values and create new human-centered business practices, which these companies, these Fortune 500 companies, have to do it so they could see value in what they're doing, so they could transform their own strategies and build a more sustainable world. And the last thing I found, number 8, is that we have to be very dedicated to create new impact of our values and practices, which are measurable for all stakeholders, not just the investor and the people putting the money up, but for everybody, from the consumer, the employee, the partner, the investor, and of course, our beloved community. So that's my transformation journey.
Yeah, and you always mention community, which I think is important because now you've got your local community, and now you have this digital community. And so it's community, community, community. You can't go wrong when you're helping the local community and also your digital community. What about, is there a fun fact about you that the audience needs to know?
Sure. Fun fact. Yeah. I lived in England 45 years ago. And I was a very idealistic kid, 60s kid, you know, real long hair and, you know, believed that I wanted to change the world. So I, my wife at that time was studying nutrition for children and realized that sugar and refined foods were horrible for you. And she became a vegetarian. So I decided to work with some very socialist oriented visionaries in England. And we launched the equivalent of what the Ralph Nader project was in England. And we wrote a book. We created a center called the Technology Assessment Consumerism Center and created a book, TAC, which was the acronym, TAC Attacks Bread. And we revealed all these untruths and myths and lies that the white bread industry was lying about the brown bread industry and how companies were lying about the coloring of their bread and how the nutritional content was. I was on then what CNN has these kind of closed circuit, you know, dialogues right now, on Zoom. Well, I was on that 45 years ago. I was the first guy, and I was in the Parade magazine in England. And one day, because I got popular, Bobby, a policeman, come knocking on my door, duck, 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 duck. And he says, "Are you Ira Kaufman?" I said, "Yes, I am." He says, "Can you prove why you're here? Because I have a warrant out that you should be not here because you're an American." And I had a green card there, with the equivalent of a green card. I was living with an English woman. And he had to close the door because he was challenging me because I was being too disruptive to the big boys.
It was a corporate, I mean, your Wonder Bread at the time. I was eating tons
the
Wonder Bread
of England called Sunblessed, the Wonder Bread of England. Yeah.
That's good that you're fighting that so early. I mean, it's tough to break through. And then if you're for the generation 20 years out, and it might be do what you did, which was like, hey, this isn't right. And I'm going to go down the tough road. Pioneers get pushback. I don't care. I'm going to get pushback. I'm going to fight. Hey, this white bread's not good for you. And you're being lied to. For the next, let's say 20 years, if you had to send a tweet out 20 years ahead to that generation, what would you text them? Let's say you text them. What would you text them?
Well, I guess I would look at, I would go back to what their values are, what they cherish, how they want to create value through their values, what they care about. If they care about the world, then how are you making one effort to make the world more sustainable? If you believe you want a more representative country, then are you making the effort to get 5 more people to vote on either side? How are you doing anything more than your words to create action? You know, to take the focus that you talk about in your focus project and make it alive, make it livable, and make yourself accountable to what you say you're going to do. This is exactly what the problem with corporations. They're not accountable. We have to be accountable to what we say we want. And if we do that, and everybody aggregates that accountability, we'll have a whole different world. And we'll fulfill the sustainable development goals of the United Nations, and we'll become a livable and sustainable planet, God willing.
No, I love that. And then in accountability, it's funny because we were just on an event with Gary Vaynerchuk, and that was his thing. He's like, could we please in 2021 just all be held accountable? If you hold yourself accountable, as a company, you hold yourself accountable, everyone will benefit. So this has been great. That's Ira Kaufman. Being good is good business. So definitely check out his book and books, Empower Us from Crisis Through Strategic Harmony, and then Digital Marketing with Purpose. So check it out. That's empowerus.world. That's empowerus.world. So www.empowerus.world. So go check it out. Be collaborative. Join the community. Start to be a catalyst. Thank you so much. That's Ira Kaufman. Thank you, Ira. So good to sit down and chat. And hopefully when the world allows, we can grab coffee and hug it out together.
God bless. Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Blessings, Ira. Take care.
Bye-bye.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Super, 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 super you.